Good afternoon. It is Wednesday, August 6th. I am your host, Stan Jastrzebski, and this is Ask the Mayor. We will be joined in just a few minutes by Columbus Mayor Fred Armstrong, as we are every Wednesday of the month, every first Wednesday of the month. Before we get to the mayor, though, we would like to inform you that there are a number of ways that you can actually reach Mayor Armstrong yourself during this next half hour. You may want to grab a pen and paper. You can take down a couple of phone numbers or an email address. The phone numbers, if you're in the local calling area, you can reach us at area code 812-855-0811. If you are further away, listening to us over the internet perhaps, feel free to dial in toll-free at area code 877-285-9348. Or if you would like to email us during the next half hour, or now or anytime, really, we will take your emails and be happy to stockpile them the next time we talk to Mayor Cruzan or Mayor Goodnight or Mayor Armstrong, in fact. Email us at mayor@indiana.edu. We understand Mayor Armstrong is in a budget meeting in Columbus as we speak, which is running a little bit long. Obviously, we would like to let the mayor take care of his budget meeting. As we get into the program today, we'll address a number of issues with Mayor Armstrong. There has been some good news recently in Columbus, which is nice to hear. A local sculpture which was actually washed away by June's flooding, the sculpture weighing about 1 ton, called Skopos, was found in the White River downstream from Millrace Park, its home, a couple of weeks ago. And just yesterday, it was pulled from the water. There was some concern over whether that was actually going to be able to happen because the city is so cash-strapped because of fund costs and having to pay for other parks and recreation amenities to be repaired. And so we'll talk to the mayor a little bit about that. We've also aired on WFIU in the past couple of weeks news about Columbus Regional Hospital. And we will get to the mayor right now. Mayor Armstrong, thanks for joining us.
That was a quick meeting that we adjourned rather abruptly to be here.
Well, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you. You've taken some time out from your meetings. I understand that there's been a lot of budget talk recently. I know you recently asked your managers to cut about 5% off of their budgets for this year and 10% for next year. And so now seems like the best time to ask. How's that all going?
Well, right now we don't know. I wish we did, but they, meaning the department heads, will let us know tomorrow on their entire budget. The council will meet all day tomorrow with every department head on their budget requests and what it's going to do to the services in this community to reduce a budget by 10%. And they are going to be pretty drastic, actually, because we don't have fat budgets like people think we do. You know, they think government's running around here with millions of dollars dangling out their pockets, but that's as far from the truth as can possibly be. But we're going to be responsible, and we have to tighten our belts. I mean, the private sector is tightening their belts every day. And you know what? We do, too. So we're just going to get them a little tighter, and some of the things that we have been doing in the past, we just won't do. I guess I could give you a couple little examples, but that would be probably giving you some fodder that it'll be coming up in the near future when the department heads give us their, I guess, their assumptions on as to what services that will be reduced.
But, well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what you thought you might not be doing in the near future.
Well, for example, we have a corrugated pickup that we provide to keep corrugated out of the landfill. So that will go away because that cost us a truck and three employees, and we don't gain anything out of it except we pick it up and keep it out of the landfill. So we may just turn that one over to the waste management team.
Are you expecting those three employees will lose their jobs?
Well, I hope not, but maybe so. We don't know that. These are just some of the speculations that are going on, what we're going to have to cover with a 10% reduction in budgets. I mean, you've got to remember about, for the most part, for the large departments like Park and Recreation, most of their budget is personnel. Same way with basically all of them. It's people. It's not making gadgets and widgets and things of this nature. It's providing services. So when you provide a service, it costs because it takes people to do that. know, we've cut back in a lot of areas, for example, by using our computer. You know, if you want to do things online, you can certainly do that, which saves time and all that for maybe an extra person. But somebody still has to go through and look all that up and do all the things that they need to do, like permitting through the planning department. You can get online and get permits, but still it takes someone at the end to get that taken care of where you've got the right permit for the right amount of money, et cetera, et cetera. Government has so many checks and balances, and that's why government is so expensive. We got such bureaucratic baloney, and that's what it is, except for the fact that if you don't have that and something comes up missing, how do you follow up on it? And that's why there are all these checks and balances, and that's why the Navy spends $5,000 for a toilet and $800 for a hammer. It's not because they want to. It's because there's so many checks and balances that we have to go through to make sure the taxpayer's dollar is spent wisely and we do it the correct manner. I mean, it's hard to believe what we have to go through to buy anything or to get anything done. But that's what's so expensive. It's the bureaucracy of all this. So we'll see what happens down the road, though.
Would you have had to ask for these cuts if the flood hadn't happened?
Some of them, yes, we would have. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep, because House Bill, again, has done this. Again, I don't have a problem with reducing property taxes, but it does not give a city any means to provide economic development adventures or ventures. Our hands are going to be tied. It seems as though now the state has come out and said that our budgets do not have to be passed until December 1st. They've given us an extension from September 30th to December 1st because of what all is happening with the House bill and all that. But from what I've also gathered through our auditor, our assessed valuation is going to go down anywhere between 20 and 25% back to the levels it was in 2004. Now, that's asinine, but evidently, according to the state legislature and our governor, that people are tired of paying property taxes. And some of them, I'm sure, are. And I think that our property tax, our residents are going to find out that we're going to be responsible. We're going to do exactly what the House bill says to do, and we're going to reduce their services by an amount, and we don't know for sure yet what that amount's going to be, but it'll be fairly drastic, and they'll be happy, I hope, because their property taxes are reduced.
What was the tone of the meeting that you just exited with respect to these drastic cuts you say are going to happen?
Well, the meeting that we just came out of was a special city council meeting, and that was for bonding for the commons and a downtown parking garage. And that was through the Redevelopment Commission, and the Redevelopment Commission wanted us to bond $11.5 million. And myself and the council said, hey, we promised $6 million for the commons. It's an $18 million project. The city promised $6 million of it, and they had to go find the other $12 million. Well, they found the other $12 million. So now they want us to belly up to bar for what we promised, and that was $6 million. And so we're going to do that. Cummins came in and said, we'll put 500 to 600 people downtown in a new building that we're going to build if you provide us parking. Well, I went to a financial advisor, and I said, you give me all the finances that you can in regards to this parking garage. $4 million of it would be through the state and the gambling boat, and the other four, the city of Columbus would have to belly up to the bar. Well, the numbers came back so astounding that if we didn't do it, we should have had our heads examined, because those $500,000 to $680,000 a year average jobs would be in another community today. So I agreed that, hey, we'll do the $6 million and we'll do the $4 million, but no more. Well, the Redevelopment Commission wanted us to give them an extra $1.5 million, and we did not do that. So we stayed with our original promise of $4 million and $6 million, which was a year ago.
With regard to changing the budgets, we touched on just a second ago the possibility that some people could lose their jobs because of these cutbacks. Are there any directives that have come down from your office to talk about trying ways to see that people keep their jobs?
Oh, sure. I mean, we're looking at everything. The good news is we've got a few extra months here, and we are going to look at everything. You got to remember the council is going to listen to department heads with what they truly and actually want. Maybe not need, but want. Okay, and they're going to look at that, and then we're going to take all these numbers. Then we're going to find out exactly how much money we will have coming in, according to the state, and then we're going to have to cut the appropriate amount, and that could be in vehicles, it could be insurance. You know, I think before we reduce staff, everybody's going to have to belly up to the bar and pay more share of their health care plan. And we're going to have to reduce some benefits on the health care plan. We're going to have to reduce some spending at conferences and things of this nature that we can do. We're not going to educate ourselves as much as we used to, but okay, so be it. If we don't, then we just don't, and we'll go with that. There'll be, for example, some services that'll be reduced. Instead of mowing the grass once a week, we may mow it once every other week. I mean, those are the things that cost a lot of money, especially when gasoline's $3.70 to $4 a gallon. So those are the things that we have to take a huge look at, and we will. But right now, downtown, I think that every city in the state of Indiana would love to have what we've got going on downtown today. And the future investment is going to be unbelievable. So the next mayor is going to love Fred Armstrong, because the future of our community financially is going to be in much better shape than what it is today.
If you have questions for Mayor Armstrong about the budget or anything else, you can call us at 812-855-0811 or toll-free at 877-285-9348. You can also email us at mayor@indiana.edu. Mr. Mayor, you mentioned Cummins a couple of minutes ago, and I'm curious. Cummins recently announced that it has posted record profits in its most recently completed quarter, and I'm wondering if there's any way that the city sort of looks at that with a little bit of envy. In other words, they've got all this money. Is there any way that the city can tap into it to help the recovery effort?
Well, I think that Cummins has been tapped and tapped and tapped and tapped by not only the city government, but by other organizations in the community. You know, if you took all the money that they have given, it's in the millions and millions and millions of dollars. Now, again, they're business people, and they have people that they have to report to, and that's their stockholders. Private business is a little bit different than government. I envy them. I wish we could make money, but we're not allowed to make money. They're doing it in a way that's going to help the future of Cummins, which also helps the future of Columbus. And let's face it, it's not only Cummins. We have some other great companies in this community that are also doing well. And they are hit up just like Cummins are hit up on different projects and worthwhile programs. So, you know, it's just like the Commons. Cummins is going to belly up to the bar on this particular item. I mean, there are things that they do that they do it behind the scenes, and I've promised them that I wouldn't ask them for anything unless we need it. And so far, I've asked for very little, but they have been very forthright and have been willing to step up to the plate and help in many, many different ways without us being even asked.
There are a number of businesses not nearly as large as Cummins that aren't doing as well. There was a kerfuffle recently over one of the city's bigger child care centers closing after the owner couldn't pay bills that she had incurred thanks to flood damage. And I mean, I know the city's position is that it can't bail out individual businesses, which it doesn't have an interest in. But I'm wondering if you're hearing other stories like these that we simply haven't heard yet. Are there other businesses, particularly even small individual-owned businesses, which have or will be forced to close because they can't pay bills following flood damage or something like that?
I'm guessing there are. They haven't contacted me personally, but I'm glad you brought this up because through a state program through the federal government also, it goes from the federal to the state to locals. In the near future, we're going to be announcing a very, 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 very low interest loan to businesses for them to borrow some money to get back on their feet again if they need whatever it may be. There'll be some criteria, but it'll be such a low interest, if probably no interest, that they'll be able to borrow this money to get going again. So we're there to help as many small businesses as we can, and that's why I applied for this grant. And if it's available, which it's going to be, then let's help them any way we can. But again, they have to pay it back. It's a helping hand. It isn't a handout. And I think that's what most businesses want. They just want a helping hand. And that's what we're going to do, and we'll be announcing that within probably a week, week and a half.
Another business that's been in the news a lot is Columbus Regional Hospital. It's now reopened its emergency room, but it's still going to be until at least October, it sounds like, before the rest of the hospital is open. Now that the mobile trailers are gone and you've got something of an emergency room back, are you hearing from people that are getting antsy about having to go to hospitals or other medical care facilities, which are in some cases further from their homes than CRHs?
I think that everybody's going to be waiting for that. I'm waiting for it anxiously because, let me tell you, it does create some huge issues. I've got an employee that her mother's in the hospital now in Seymour. And it's a good hospital, but, you know, driving to Seymour every day and not being around friendly, I guess, areas, it does create some hardships. So, yes, people are anxious. And let me tell you, from what I heard this morning, it looks as though probably October, November, where not maybe all the hospital, but, you know, operations will begin, surgical operations will begin, and there'll be rooms for people to stay in. That will be a great relief in itself. I think that they are really going as quickly as they can to get that hospital back in operational form because, you know, you have physicians that want to work. They don't want to go to other hospitals either. They live in Columbus, and they want to work in Columbus. So, I think that it's going to be exciting the day it all reopens 100%, and I think people in this community will feel much better. It's one of those things that you don't know what you had until you lose it, you know, and we didn't realize that we had such a great hospital, and then we lost it and think, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? And for the most part, it's been put together in a pretty great way for nothing, and that's bringing in that Med One team, and they were great people. And these hospitals surrounding Columbus have been fantastic by taking on patients that they normally would not have been taking on. But you know, when it gets back to somewhat normal, I think that the community will just be thrilled to death.
It's interesting that the hospital, in some part, has helped the city position itself very prominently as this flood relief effort has gone along. I mean, how has the city managed to get so much support from lawmakers and from other communities that be in the news, it seems, every day to try to get Columbus as much help as possible? How have you managed that?
Well, again, I'm not in charge of the hospital. They've got some great leadership there that have really should be boasting, but they aren't. But let me tell you, let's just face it. I'm glad you mentioned that. There are so many great people in our country and in the state of Indiana and other cities who stepped up to the plate when people were in time of need. And I think this flood, although it was devastating and will be devastating for many years to come, has been in somewhat a blessing. The community came together as one. State, county, and local officials worked together without saying, oh, I want the big head for this one, and I want this one. They just all flowed and worked together, just as these other hospitals bailed out our regional hospital and things of this nature. And the federal government, our congressmen and our senators and our state representatives have come in and done their job. It's what they're supposed to do, to try to help people. Now, was everybody satisfied with every single thing that happened? Heck no. When have you seen that? But overall, the churches in this community, my goodness, I can't say enough. They've just really responded well. Now, as I say all this, Right in behind this comes property tax relief. And those churches that that helped us so in so many ways, volunteering their people to help rebuild homes and did all the things that they did that they didn't have to do, we provide service to them also, which is basically in the form of picking up their trash. That will go away. So you kick them in the teeth for what they've done to help us because we can't afford to do that anymore. And that's the thing that sticks in my craw about all this. People at the legislature just didn't think about those things. Or maybe we're wrong. We shouldn't be doing all this for the churches who probably, maybe they're not on the tax rolls, but they do the things that we would have to do as a government. They just do them for the most part, and we don't have to worry about that. But now we're sort of stepping on their toes. And I know people out there are going to say, oh, big deal, Mayor, it's time that their toes are stepped on. Well, it's pretty hard to say that when they've just done so much for this community, and I think it's the same thing in every community. So those are the things that we're facing in budget cuts where we have so many downtown programs right now that and actually community-wide programs, and they always want a policeman or a fireman or somebody there to help them. We're not going to do that. They're going to have to pay for it. And here they are trying to maybe make extra money for a program, for a benefit, and now we can't do it, or if we do it, they've got to, what the money they make, they've got to pay somebody to do it.
There are still other flooding-related complaints rolling around. There are still people saying that their abandoned homes are being looted, and you and I have talked about flood-related mm-hmm. looting in the past. And there are also people who say that they still see water to this day flowing back into their basement. Some people say they've bought 2, 3, 4 water pumps, and they keep burning them out because they can't mm-hmm. keep the water out of their basements. Are you hearing these same concerns? And is the city doing anything about the looting?
There's one area that have that's an issue, and it was an issue before the flood. So the flood certainly didn't help matters, but this was happening before the floods came. The area in which they built is sitting on an aquifer. And the developer, evidently, has said, yeah, we can build a basement on this property because we're pretty good. Well, guess what? They weren't as good as they thought. So the water that's coming in is probably mostly clean, I would guess, coming from underneath the ground. And it may never be able to be fixed unless there's a large amount of money spent on a drainage system that will alleviate all this. And my city engineer has, you know, said they could do this and this, and pumps are pretty expensive, but they can pump that water out and drain it to a certain location. But you're talking a lot of money, and the association there would have to belly up to the bar, and it's probably going to be more money than what they can afford. It's one of those things that a basement probably should not have been built in that particular area. Again, we can't stop them from building a basement unless it's in a floodplain. And the homes that were built there weren't in the floodplain with basements.
Mr. So, Mayor, you're doing a lot of bellying up to the bar. The flooding's not driving you to drink, is it?
It could be.
It would be understandable if it was. But
yeah, it could be. But, you know, those are the things that, you know, people will tell you anything. But, you know, if that developer has said, oh, yeah, we want a basement, and they say, yeah, we'll build you a basement, no problem, we're really good. Well, let me tell you, there shouldn't have been a basement built there. But it's one of those buyer beware things, and that's a shame, but that's the way it is. Can we help them? We can maybe lead them in the right direction, but I can't bail them out on something that they probably shouldn't have done to begin with. And that's the sad part about it. You know, it really is sad, but now government is supposed to bail them out over something that probably shouldn't have been done to begin with.
And what about the looting of the flood-damaged homes that have now been abandoned? Are you hearing about that?
I'm not hearing much about that. There are some abandoned homes. The major portion of those are in the Pleasant Grove area, and that's the area that we're working on the buyout project. But let me tell you, if they're looting, they're not getting anything. The only thing they're getting is the potentiality of getting hurt. But no, I haven't heard much on that looting end of it whatsoever.
I'd like to spend our last few minutes of the program, hopefully, on some good news. We understand that last week the missing sculpture, Scopos, from Millrace Park was finally found, and yesterday it was dragged from the White River. Were you party to that at all?
Well, I was down there early in the morning when they had the equipment down there, and, of course, I did see Scopos in the water. You know, Tom Weatherall, a local businessman here in town, and Rick Miller, another local businessman, knew that the city didn't have the $18,000-$20,000 it was going to cost to get in there and get that thing out and set it back up. And they just volunteered and with their crew, and they did an excellent job. The artist came in from Florida, who was originally from Columbus, to look at it, to make sure things. In fact, it was a good thing he was there because he gave them some ideas on where to punch holes to drain the water where it wouldn't affect the piece of art. So, yeah, it's set back in its original state and looks pretty good. It was all cleaned off, and I'm thinking maybe there ought to be some mounting there or something now, although it weighs about 2,000 pounds.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are you going to tie it down this time?
Well, so far it hasn't been, but I'm not saying it won't be. But we'll have to take a look-see at that. And, again, water, as far as I know, it floods the park, which it's built to do that. But in that area, it's really never been a problem. But this time, it certainly was. So, yeah, it was moved probably, I'm guessing, 300 yards from 300-400 yards from where it originally was. So it's amazing what water can do, and so powerful.
You mentioned that the city was having a hard time figuring out how it was going to come up with $18,000 or $20,000 to remove it from the river, and the fact that the donations helped that to happen. Is this a relatively common story that we're having a lot of people donating things to try to get the city back to where it was?
Absolutely. I mean, and those are the things that they may be sort of intangible, but it's what the spirit of the community. And we were down and we were out. We were wet. But at the end of the day, this community, and I'm telling you, give credit to the people. The mayor should not ever in a million years take any credit for any of this. It's the people. And by golly, they did. They stepped up to the plate and have done a wonderful job. And I'm so proud of them. It makes my job and my life a little bit easier. But I knew that this is what was going to happen because great people. We live in a great country, and by golly, I'm blessed to be the mayor of, I think, the best city in the United States.
Yeah, I spoke with Parks and Recreation folks last week who said they were genuinely worried that this was going to have to be at the bottom of the river for some time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a crunch. You know, everything, the golf course that's been around for many, 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 many years. That is our 9-hole golf course. It's in the financial issues right now. And, of course, with 7 holes, that's all they're playing. It just mounts up. But there are a lot of people willing to step up to the plate and help out. So we'll see what happens with that. And I think that it'll all come together. It's just going to take a little extra work.
Well, we are out of time for this week. My thanks, as always, to Mayor Fred Armstrong, who joins us again here on Ask the Mayor every first Wednesday of the month. My thanks also to producer Colin Bishop, to engineer Michael Pashkash, sitting in the booth making us sound like we know what we're doing. My name is Stan Jastrzebski. We will be back with you again next week on Ask the Mayor. We hope you'll join us then.